Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
You ever seen King Ralph?
No. What?
Never mind.
It's like the
What's
step
good,
below.
Yeah,
it's like
we
the step.
Move.
Rob with every reference. Are y'all seen this? Like, no, Rob.
No, no, Rob. Who the fuck is this?
Relatable, normal human reference.
What's good,
started.
Internet?
Welcome to Waypoint.
These are all staying. I want to figure out how to get these in.
No, this is just nope. We started.
Yeah, we've already started. They're in here. Like,
what's good, Internet? It's July 8th, 2022, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 492. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and I'm joined by Patrick Lepik.
I'm here.
Renata Price.
Hello.
Ricardo Contreras, I just got signed out
wow.
of the document. Because Vice,
oh my god.
Vice
you can't
IT,
get to introducing us without the document? Who do I work with?
Welcome
I forget.
To Waypoint
I,
Radio.
Welcome to, which Patreon is this?
Patreon.com/civilized.
Jesus.
Can't keep them straight. Are you logging back in? You can't just keep the podcast going?
No.
I understand this.
Unless we've got to be out of here
you know
by
what?
Four.
Don't just give it dead
okay,
air.
Here's,
just
here's, here's, a here's a, just a fun thought experiment. Imagine an IT department that can keep you logged in for the 30 days when you say, remember this computer for 30 days. Mm-hmm. Just imagine not having to re-authenticate your session to your corporate email every 2 days. Just
did
imagine
you,
it.
Did you log into a different computer?
Yeah, Kato is possible. I committed the great crime of using a laptop and a desktop in the same 24-hour period.
It's rough. I don't understand what's going on there. I feel like I get stints of it where it's like fine, and like I'll actually go like 20 days without
right.
having to reauthenticate.
But then it just goes completely sicko mode.
Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while, it's just like fuck you.
Yeah, like and always like right when you're in the middle of something where it's like, I'm gonna log you
always.
Out. I hope you have your phone next to you. Anyway, this is why I needed the script.
I do have a question.
No, Ren, sorry, we're in the script now.
Got it. Cool.
Hey, good news, everybody. Remember E3? There's a little high concept, so we're just going to get to it. Hey, good news, everybody.
God.
Remember E3? Well, now you can call it Re3, which I suppose doesn't
Jesus
really
Christ.
Sound right when I say
no.
it out loud.
That's,
but
I'm
so if
done.
You see
that
my
was,
script,
that was a syllable
I can't,
away from
I can't
your
actually
threat.
Leave this call because I'm recording a backup, but I'm taking my headphones on and walking away.
If you could see my script, you'd see I took the word read.
Well, kind of, if you could just figure out how a webcam works, then we could see you walk off.
If either of our producers had a webcam that worked.
No. I have a webcam every other fucking recording session, except for when I am visiting my girlfriend. Rob hates it when women see each other.
It keeps happening.
Well, what's Kato's excuse?
He just desyncs in a way we all find disturbing and has bad vibes.
I fixed the desync. The issue is that I only have one, and it's a pain to move it between my streaming computer, where it's more important to have
Jesus
the camera connected.
Christ, $30 webcam.
Computers what? I don't have
Kato,
money.
What's wrong
one
with
day.
You?
Kato, one
fucking
day.
Money? Who has money?
You
one can
day.
Expect a $30 webcam. You're a producer for a website with a successful boy boy boss.
Wait, I can expense that?
Oh, do not play. Do not.
No. Hold on.
I thought that would be a desk thing.
I thought we weren't allowed to get desk things. Do you want to expense a second mouse while you're at it, you little freak? you fucking Apple mouse.
That's too close to normal office supplies, and we can't get those.
Remember that handsome leather mouse we saw? I can't buy it now because somebody said it had strong Jordan Peterson energy, and
it went viral recently. Yeah. And I saw it and I was dying. I was like, like, Rava's never gonna speak about this mouse.
Never gonna speak. The mouse is dead. I can't do it.
For me, this mouse represents the height of the Western empires and kind of our ability to
is that your Kermit the Frog?
It is unfortunately distressingly true to Jordan Peterson.
Have you not listened to Jordan Peterson recently, Patrick? Because that is like barely a step away from what he sounds like.
That is not a particularly broad impression. That is pretty much like how that weird little man sounds.
I saw some Command and Conquer villain talking to me that he was going to cancel people on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
but the point is read. So if you see my script, you take the word read, you take that second E, flip it around into a three. Which we all know is elite speak E. Right.
Yeah.
And then
a letter that is a number at once.
Right. And then you get E3 right in the middle of the word read. And that makes sense. Well, okay, I didn't explain why I'm doing this.
Read?
This makes sense because the conventions conglomerate that runs Penny Arcade Expo and or owns Eurogamer and Rock Paper Shotgun and does the Eurogamer
Expo
stuff.
Do like the anime expos or whatever? Yeah.
Huge.
They own everything now. Basically, like if there is a convention that has decided, oh man, it's annoying to run a convention. Reed Pop has got its fingers out. Hey. He's like rubbing those palms together. I'll take that convention off you. I got it.
And boy, the ESA is motivated to sell. let us say. So Patrick, E3 saved or E3 just like a looted corpse that is being sort of turned into Penny Arcade LA?
Is the latter like the best case for the former? You know what I mean? I think E3 becoming PAX LA is probably what this becomes. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens because you've had Keeley, you know, taking like increasingly not so subtle pot shots at an organization that he has worked with for years, and the Summer Game Fest.
Nice.
Game.
Yeah, you did it. You did it. You got it in one, Patrick. Good job.
Thank you.
Man, it was going to be Harper when they don't get that bell.
I was going to say, I was just trying to avoid a bell.
He wasn't going to do the bit again. He learned his lesson. I'm canceled.
We'll see who gets canceled, you son of a bitch.
God, Kato, just shoving it into different parts of the podcast. Anyway, Keeley sort of proposed, his thing as kind of a pseudo replacement, even going so far as to have a boutique in-person event that we were invited to, and it just the timing didn't work out with the June stream that we were already planning. And also we don't do a ton of like previews coverage at Waypoint, but that's the kind of thing that you could imagine. Oh, next year, like that's 2 or 3 days, and there's a public day and there's a private day, which is like what E3 and Gamescom and like every other kind of like press public event does. And if E3 ends up being roughly the same time as Keeley's things next year, they're already in the lead up to when I had first heard the Keeley thing was happening. And they were like, kind of like, hey, hush, hush. And then you'd hear from other publishers who were like, hey, hush, hush. Should we organize a thing? Are you going? And it's so easy to imagine what ends up happening is Keeley getting to say, I've made my own E3 or mini E3. And then E3 saying, we've made our own PAX. And then all the game publishers going, well, you're all in the same 2-week window anyway. We'll just do some events around it. And they've just through a bunch of different blocks, just produced a smaller, but basically just what E3 ended up being by the end anyway, was major game publishers like Electronic Arts, Sony, ditching the expo floor and doing their own side events. And it's like not hard to imagine. That's just what it ends up becoming again, is there'll be enough of a reason for like our group to maybe go out next year, because between Keeley and E3 proper, there'd be enough stuff to do a bunch of podcasts and streams that were worth talking about. And then we just end up where we started, but also way more Nintendo Direct style events all year long.
And that is a metaphor for the future of the United States of America.
Can you elaborate on that, Rob?
Oh, you know, just sort of dissolving into spiteful passive aggression and then a balkanization that fundamentally changes nothing, but also leaves everybody in closely, in uncomfortably close proximity to just resent the shit out of each other from across the street.
Okay, yeah, that works. I'll be honest. The first 15 minutes of this podcast have made me more worried for a host of a show that I'm on. This has been incredible. Thank you, Rob.
Slowly sips a beer in response to that commentary, observation. Not quite critique. Just
a helpful observation.
It's a vibes note. Our vibes rule today. I love this. Good vibes. Legitimately, this is good.
Yeah, I don't know what E3's vibes are. This is their
Well, they
best
couldn't
case
have gotten
scenario.
Worse, no, right? Like, no. I mean,
well, they could have gone insolvent, and so I guess in theory it could have gotten worse because they're probably getting pennies on the dollar for like their, you know, the sale of this. But E3 has cachet; it is a brand, and if you were starting an expo that was video game based in LA, you'd rather have E3 attached to it than not, right? Like E3 means more to a video game fan than it does PAX. And so even if it is PAX, it's like, hey, people like to announce things in June. It fits within the yearly cycle anyway, even though that's been distributed quite a bit in the like intervening years. So my guess is I think Microsoft already committed to showing up. So they like doing the June thing. That is like Microsoft is just refuses to give up on that timing. And probably to their benefit, right? Like everyone else kind of gets out of the way. And so.
I wonder whether or not that has something to do with US specific tax stuff. Where,
what
like,
do you mean?
The way that their cycles work out, it makes sense for them to make all their announcements at that point. But other places that are outside of the States do a more spread out thing. Because it does feel like Microsoft doesn't do as many mini events during the year.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. I think like Xbox, as big as it seems to us, is like a small like drop in the ocean that is Microsoft's pivot to cloud-based initiatives. That is where they make all of their money these days. So sometimes that is true, right? We're like game companies where we release a game. Like we've been delayed till March, but we will not be delayed past March 31st, you know, 20XX, because we need to show those first day sales on our quarterly results. I think it's just habit. I think they like it. They like doing, you know, I mean, Nintendo stuck around E3 for the longest time too, even though it, you know, increasingly didn't make as much sense for them. So yeah, I don't know. It'll probably be fine. Look, I want an excuse to get us all together and go to LA and record a bunch of pods in person and be super tired for a week. I actually like miss that.
I haven't said, how's your show going? In like 3 years.
Yeah. I want to do that again. And I want to introduce Ren to it.
I started writing about video games in the summer. Well, that's not why I started writing about video games, but I started like, I had a job for the first time in the summer of 2020. And so fucking not a single interaction with an extended group of my peers before just has not happened. The only way I have ever known people is through Twitter, or like getting drinks after work when I worked at Kotaku. But that is it.
Yeah. I am just, so the thing that I can sort of see is, I never attended like a EGX, right? I'm curious if the vibes of that roughly stayed the same after like Reed Pop took it over. Because like part of it is also they took things that were a bit more grassroots, let's say, and now they've sort of been folded up into a large company that does these expos. I'm curious, like for people who can sort of compare and contrast them, whether there's sort of a whether there's any sort of distinctive vibes left to any of these things. Because I think one of the things that I'm curious about with the future of E3 is I could see it making a lot of sense for like wanting a penny arcade style thing in Southern California. Like, obviously, why wouldn't you want to do something like that?
Did you see the lines for Anime Expo?
Yeah, I did. God, I did.
Concerning. But, you know, I don't think that's all. Anime Expo, I think, is also run by Reed Pop.
It is.
I'm just stuff like that. You look at that. And, you know, I mean, obviously anime is kind of having a moment of like it's bigger than ever, but
I love the trends reported thing. Anime is having
a moment.
It's bigger than ever.
It's the best Destiny 2's ever been.
Madden 2022. It's the best it's ever been. But you see stuff like that. You can immediately see. Yeah, we just rolled out one of these for video games, and the video game companies that you know are showing up to these other expos, they just whoop, plop this over, bring it to the next one. And you know, the only question there is like, how much is it worthwhile to folks like press and retail at the point that it's becoming just regional pop ups of the same exact show in different areas? You know, that's just a. And plus the last E3 that was, you know, the most fan centric, it was terrible. It was whatever you think of Reed Pop and PAX, or what Reed Pop even did to PAX, even PAX at its like worst or most Reed Pop-ish, there were things to do. There was nothing to do at E3 if you were a fan.
I would say E3 2020, when it was canceled for COVID, was more fun than 2019, where it was like trying to open itself up a bit more. And yeah, it was dire. It was half empty, and then there was really no worthwhile fan experience that they ever figured out.
No.
But that I think is part of the weird thing where I could see them wanting to avoid doing what you described, where it's just a pop-up of the same show again and again and again. But E3 is such a slot bucket of PR, basically. Like, that is what, like, historically the show is. It's just like, come on in, little piggies, get in there, get your trailers, get your hands on, get your demos. And like, it is, if it is more fan centric and has value for those folks, I think the weird thing you lose is the sense of and this is still the really cool like announcement like trade show that it has historically been. I think a trade show and a fan convention have a different vibe. And and the truth is, like, the trade show model just has made less and less sense for video games for years. So I'm curious if they try to preserve any of that, or if they just entirely let it die and, you know, call time on that entire era.
I need to go to another meeting in those upper halls, Rob. I can't die without having done that one more time.
I need to walk 3/4 of a mile across the most durable carpet fibers known to man.
Jesus.
To take a pair of back-to-back 15-minute meetings that are each running 25 minutes late. Really? And if I could get stuck in a food court traffic jam in the middle of that, mwah, oh, I could die a happy man. But hey, you know, it occurs to me, I might have found us a segue. Isn't that cool?
Don't you love it when this stuff like that happens just naturally?
I do. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, we got the age of E3 sort of turning over a new leaf. Ren, you've been playing
Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Well, that's not where I was going, Kato. You really stepped all over that.
No real clue where Ron is going.
Well, Ren, you should have known, because you've been playing and writing about Last Call BBS, which is sort of the end of an era for a developer or a development team, and a reflection on an internet culture whose time has passed.
I thought you were going to make a food court segue, because there's a...
We can stop being meta.
There's a
about
game
this.
In there. There's a-
Let Ren speak. Allyship.
Hey, stop. Kato, can you go back? Kato,
stop being meta.
You can leave this part in, but can you put the ding that you did for the summer after he does the ally shit part? Yeah, you can keep both these parts in. It's fine, but just letting you know.
Ren, I'm sorry. I saw this going better in my head.
It's okay. No worries, Rob. Hey, listen. Good allyship is about being uncomfortable sometimes. And sometimes it's that uncomfortability comes from your own kind of.
Do the elevator picture. Fucking stop it. Get your hand off your chest. Oh my God. I'm uncomfortable now.
So I've been playing a lot of Last Call PPS, which is the final game from Indie Darling Zachtronics, who announced that they were closing on their own terms. During the middle of June, they said that they would be closing. At least that is when I read about their closing. They have made a bunch of very unique puzzle games for the entirety of their existence, and that are just odd little passion projects. That were extremely popular with a very small audience that was utterly dedicated, and they never had like a capital B big hit. Their most famous game is Chemtech, and so after, I believe, 16 releases, they are finishing with Last Call BBS, which is basically a send-off to the studio, and is a collection of 9 different puzzle games, actually no, 8 different puzzle games, all wrapped up in this like faux 1980s like computer aesthetics. Like it's actually not 1980s, probably more like mid-early 90s internet and like computer aesthetics in the loosest version you can imagine. The literal aesthetics are not direct representations of like 1980s and 1990s computing, but they do attempt to get across a particular vibe, and it exceeds like utterly. I think it's a really neat, collection of games.
You wrote a really good essay about the experience, like coming to grips with it and sort of the vibe it's channeling. But I am curious. It is like quite self-consciously a period piece. Mm. About sort of a moment. Or a series of moments in the development of the internet. I'm curious, what's the overall conceit? Like where are you situated in this, and what story do you think it's telling about like our recent past?
So it is, you are basically given, your player character is given a computer by a friend of theirs, who ran the website Last Call BBS, and was basically in charge of uploading a bunch of different shareware games, and basically it's a personal website in like the truest sense, and like mm-hmm. the true sense, not even the personal blog era, right? It is a game that has no interest in forums and like forum culture. It is a game that does not have interest in the blogosphere, none of that. It is solely interested in an era of the internet based around people doing things that they found personally interesting, kind of for the sake of doing the thing that they found personally interesting.
Because there was no way to share it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Because this is like right before, like, this is more of like a Rob Cotto question, but like, I played a little bit of this and just to get the vibe and aesthetic. And it's like, it's at the edge of the AOL, like cyber, or what was that? CompuServe. Prodigy. But it's like a little bit before that. So yeah. It's still a dial up. Like the BBS era is a little before my time on mm-hmm. computers. Like BBS has still existed. Well, not, no, it wasn't BBS. It's BBS is you dialing into a forum, basically. Like I saw Usenet, like, and that's where I, like my first piracy was on Usenet, like using AOL to dial in. So like the aesthetic here was like interesting to me because it was still like, it was nostalgic. Because I brushed up against this era, but like got onto computers as though it still maintained some of that aesthetic, but had moved into a different like era of connectivity on the internet itself.
Mm-hmm. Part of the thing that I found really interesting about its aesthetic is that the player character did not grow up with it. The character who is writing a bunch of memos to you sprinkled throughout this computer and that like pop up when you open different games, is basically very uncomfortable with the idea of thinking of these as retro games, and makes that that uncomfort explicit to the player character in a way that I find really interesting, because in that way it becomes not just a nostalgia trip, but a nostalgia trip being handed over to someone else. It is explicitly about the way that new people approach the recent past, people who did not experience it approach the recent past, and I think that is really interesting. And it does this like aesthetically, it does this in terms of like the way it's like written discourse works. One thing I find like really interesting is there is not a personal website where like this guy's thoughts are held. They are in memos, right? But the memos feel like things that you would find on some random person's personal website. It has that same rhetorical character, and it has that same like social motive of someone ostensibly writing for, quote unquote, for an audience, but actually just writing about a thing that they find deeply exciting. And it is really intimate. It is a really intimate framing device, because you know that you were given this computer as a gift, and also all of the writing therein is from a very close perspective to the history of all of the different like texts you're interacting with.
I am curious, and Patrick, I think you also like had this concern a little bit. Zachtronics games are a land of contrast, certainly. Like, they're not all like this, but some of their games, I would say, can be intimidatingly abstract, like puzzlers. Mm-hmm. And I think Patrick and I both share a reticence to be just completely owned by...
Eliza is not a Zachtronics game, right?
It is. It is.
It is. Like,
okay. Yes.
But you know what? It isn't. Because it isn't. Because my experience with Zachtronics is folks like Austin and other people I follow on like on Twitter who would be like, damn, new Zachtronics is out. Love this shit. And then I look at an image and go, that's inscrutable. And then I load it up and like, this is going to be the one for me. And then I go, that's inscrutable. And then I turn it off because these, like, it's a kind of puzzle game that just my brain looks at and goes, it won't happen. It's not going to happen. It's okay. You don't even have to feel bad. Because like when you just know something's not going to happen, you can't even feel like a personal failure. This isn't a mountain you can climb. Like, there's just a big no sign. Yep. And so I had this funny moment where not only did I want to check this out so that I could like participate in the, yep, Brent. Like,
though, yeah.
That is what I think about when I see a Zachtronics game.
Sicko
and some
space,
people look at that
yes,
and go,
yes,
like, time to turn into a, the noises the Kato are making. And then I look at that and go, like, that's the noise I make every time. And I proposed to Ren, who was new to these games, you know, what is your response to this? I know you don't have a history with these games.
Look at these screenshots. The Robotics Club history, though, I think is an advantage here. This
I think we got a fucking ringer here.
Because to me, I look at a Zachtronics game and it's like somebody took a chemistry set and an erector set and dropped a hand grenade into both. And like, boom, there you go. Have fun. But yeah, I think...
Wait, what is the sequence?
What I'm saying is I loaded this one up thinking, could this one be different? Because Ren proposed that it might be. And... the answer, dear listener, was not. Like the closest I got was this last one that's been pasted. It's essentially like a Minesweeper adjacent game where you're trying to figure out the pathing.
It's Picross.
Yeah,
it's
not, you know who's fucking bad at Picross? Me. You know who doesn't play Picross? Me.
It's not exactly Picross, but it's very Picross adjacent.
Yeah, it's playing in that same space where you're like
you have the numbers along the side of how many blocks are in a row and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's what if Picross had a very particular. Now I'm saying Picross instead of Picross. It's what
it's
if Picross.
Picross.
Oh my god!
Also,
had a very particular
Patrick,
set of rules that you had to follow that were really really fun to play with.
Yeah, they like yes. They like remove the one rule about Picross where usually. The numbers mean that's a continuous block. Instead, added a couple other things around, like enemies that are placed on this little map that give you different logic to work around with. Patrick, I'm sorry, it's Zachtronics.
Don't care.
What was Patrick saying?
He was saying Zachtronics.
Zachtronics?
Yeah.
Well, that's an odd.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I thought I was mishearing it. Anyway. Zachtronics is also the name of the company they break into in sneakers. So in terms of, but Ren, it clicked with you. Like, it sounds like not only did you roughly like grok how the logic of the puzzles, but then you were also having that great moment of like stepping away from a thing and then having the eureka moment.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about two times I stepped away from the computer while playing this game. The first time was when I downloaded the game that I sent everyone, the first game in the collection, which I believe is called Dungeons and Diagrams. And in Dungeons and Diagrams, that is that Picross S game we talked about, right? During that download, the game has a fake download screen that you go to. And it takes about a minute and a half to download any of these games, during which I stepped up and I was like, well, this downloads, I'm just going to go real quick, get some water. I got the water. And I was like, well, I'm over here, I might as well just go brush my teeth. And I go brush my teeth, get my water, walk back to my room. And I'm like, I've never done that during a loading screen before. This is a really effective tone setter because this game is doing a really good job of telling you how it wants to be enjoyed. And like telling you, hey, this is not a immediate gratification game. This is a sit down, take your time, and like savor this. And I think that is in and of itself a really cool, like in some ways annoying, but also a really cool like aesthetic maneuver to kind of as a tone setting piece.
Now, dear listener, but, if you hear this and you worry, but what if I want to just sit down and keep playing a game? There's solitaire in the game. So you can play solitaire while things download, which is what I did. And then I would end up continuing to play solitaire because I was like, oh, I can get one more win before I start this other game that I just downloaded. And then I would pay, what's my hour count right now?
Oh, God, not again.
I'm at 7 hours. I think sure about four of those.
But the
are
thing,
just
the weird thing is
solitaire.
You only downloaded this game at 11 a.m.
Jesus.
Got to prep for the podcast and play 7 hours of solitaire.
These fake games are taking a while to download.
The other one that Rob mentioned is the time where I got up from a computer after completing a level. The second game in the collection is called 20th Century Food Court. And in 20th Century Food Court, you effectively produce an assembly line for making 20th century foods for a far future audience. The kinds of foods that they do are really varied, but it is tremendously fun for my little brain because it is hitting all of the buttons that coding used to hit for me and like electrical engineering used to hit for me when I was studying engineering and robotics in high school, setting up a board like this legitimately took me back to that moment in my life in a way that I find really satisfying. But I'm going to describe the problem that I had. The thing that you have to do is you have to make three different kinds of ice cream cones. It's nine different kinds of ice cream cones. Small, medium, and large, and chocolate, vanilla, and twist. And you have to basically create a set of logical triggers that tell the machine what to do and what parts it needs to be using. So, for example, you have the ice cream, you have the cone machine, and then you have the tray. The tray comes out, the tray sits underneath a stacker, the cone comes out, the cone is then put on the tray. Great. Really simple, basic, like, logic thing. The stacker, once it has stacked something, knows that it should then eject whatever that thing is. And so the ice cream cone gets to the tray, it stacks, and it ejects. That is the simplest logic you're going to get in this game. Moves forward, and it arrives at a sorter. The sorter holds it until it receives a command that tells it what direction to send the tray in. Next to the sorter is a barcode scanner. The scanner reads the tray and tells the rest of the system what the order was. And then the ice cream machine reads what the scanner told it and then puts out the particular flavor of ice cream it should, and then uses the initial order to set the amount of scoops it should apply to the cone. And then once all of that is done, once the counter hits zero, it pushes it off and sends it away. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I've explained a lot, but that is how it works, right? That was my end solution. But on my first attempt, I added a sequencer. And what the sequencer did was the sequencer would go, okay, sequence. The sequencer basically lets you set a set number of outputs to do in response to like a trigger. So in this case, the sequencer had A, B, C, and D as its outputs. And so I told it to do A, then B, then C, then D. A was the command to dispense chocolate ice cream. B was the command to dispense vanilla ice cream.
Wait.
C was the command to dispense both chocolate and vanilla ice cream. And then D was the command that reduced the counter by one and that also ejected the that also told the sorter to check if it should eject the tray. And here's the thing, folks. The sequencer was not necessary.
The entire thing was redundant set of commands.
Yes, because what was happening was the way that I did it was there's and statements when you're doing logic like this, and there's or statements. And statements, you need two things to happen. You need one thing to be true, and you need one of another three things to be true. Or statements basically just multiply outputs. So, you know, if any of input A, B, C, or D are true, then output the same thing, right? And so I have in here 12 and or statements because once the sequencer does the thing, the sequencer sends a signal to the and statement and says, hey, check if this order is chocolate. And if the order is chocolate, then the A command goes through the chocolate and statement. That is the only way the sequence actually sends the information through. And so every time it got there, it would take four turns checking over and over again. Is this chocolate?
No.
Is this vanilla?
No.
No.
Is this Twist? Yeah! Woo!
All so right, the game twist. Lovingly one recreated the experience of having written incredibly shitty, inefficient code.
One scoop has been deployed. Hey, is this chocolate? No. Is this vanilla? No. Is this Twist? Oh, hell yeah! Let's go!
Oh, my God.
Scoop 2 has been deployed. Hey, is this chocolate? No. Is this vanilla? No. And it will just do that over and over again.
The Twist.
Now.
Sorry, I was going to say, there's only two. I think this is also. There's only two things you can tell the ice cream machine to do.
No, you can send both commands.
Yeah, you can send exactly. You have to send both commands. But
this is the thing that I did is an exceptionally clever solution to a problem that I did not have. I thought, and I was wrong, that to get a Twist ice cream cone, what you had to do was send a chocolate scoop and then a vanilla scoop, and then the game would just be like, that's Twist. You sent one chocolate, one vanilla. We're just going to interpret this as Twist. And so if that had been the case, this would have been a very clever solution to this problem, because the computer would be like, oh, I have to check if it's A or B. Like, if it's A, if the A, B, C thing would have made sense.
Right.
Because the computer has to check every single time. Oh, if it's Twist, I can just tell.
Yeah,
I can say, do these two actions in sequence, right? That is the purpose of the sequencer. However, that is not how you make Twist ice cream. And so I made all of this fucking bullshit, all of this stupid fucking bullshit. And I was like, good job, Renata. I'm going to go put my eyeliner on for the day. And I walked away from my computer I put on my eyeliner, and I had one wing on, and then I went, oh, fuck me, you don't need the sequencer. And then I started wandering around my house, mumbling to myself, going, you don't need the sequencer. You don't need the sequencer. I don't even think you need the scanner. You don't need the scanner or the sequencer. You can just take the base command, and you don't need the sequencer or the scanner at all. You don't need the sequencer or the scanner at all.
I think you need the scanner, though, don't you?
You do fucking need the scanner, let me tell you. I was wrong about that. So then I redesigned it from scratch.
Wait, you could just use a sensor, though.
Kato, I know. Kato.
Okay, you two need to get on a stream and do this instead of doing it on the podcast.
Sorry. I went and checked mine. Stop. I was like, look at how
these are. They're now checking each other's code.
You can do that on a stream next Tuesday.
I meanwhile, I'm looking up where's the nearest Dairy Queen.
You have three counters. What are you doing?
I needed. That's counting the amount of scoops for each type of chocolate, vanilla,
we're
or
to the bottom
twist.
Of this, while we take a break. We'll be
you
right
can
back
catch up on this
messages.
At twitch.tv/waypoint next week.
Yeah, we're gonna decompile his code, figure out what's going on with the ice cream machine, and we will get back to you after the break. Meanwhile, the nearest Dairy Queen near me, because I'm trying to figure out how far would I have to go to get a twist cone. Looks like it's about 25 minutes.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, it's not as bad as I feared. So I know what my plans are, because that is still just remembering
so
that
20-minute break, and we'll come back to talk about more games.
No.
Wait, sorry, 40-minute, because you have to do the round trip.
No, so this is my Friday, so I'll be doing this after the show.
Oh, damn. Okay.
After I'm off on my weekend. We'll be right back after this break.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we're back. Hey, you know, Dairy Queen discussion. I almost call it Dairy Cream, which is what I called it when I was a little kid because I didn't understand. I couldn't read. But I knew what I wanted, which was Dairy Queen and that delicious cream they serve there. Anyway, the point is, all this makes me want to ask Patrick about Clawee.
Oh, my God.
A thing for kids. Yeah. Another hearkening to childhood treasures and experiences. Patrick, tell me about Clawee.
So Clawee is a...
I'm sorry, is Rob doing what? Ooh voice, or is that just...
No, Clawee. Clawee. I don't know how you pronounce it without doing
Clawee?
That voice.
Yeah, he's hitting the W in a way where I'm like, Clawee.
So how would you pronounce C-L-A-W-E-E?
Clawee. Clawee, Clawee.
Yeah,
I think
so
I'm not saying I'm not saying like, it's wrong. It sounded like a woo voice, and I needed to know what was happening.
The Clawee is Lawee. Anyway.
No!
So, part of my thing is like as my oldest daughter, who'll be six soon, like gets exposed to things through older kids. I want to make sure that like I have some sense of like how it works, right? Like that's why I got into Roblox. And I like avoided TikTok for a long time, despite thinking that I probably would enjoy it. I was like, she was finally hearing about it, seeing it on like a friend's older kid's phone or tablet or something. I was like, all right, I need to understand the TikTok thing. And so I sometimes when I'm putting her to sleep, we'll like read books, brush our teeth. And then I was like, all right, we can scroll through TikTok for 5 minutes. We've gotten the algorithm down to just
occasionally inappropriate videos of Kermit swearing and like hitting someone that I skip through very quickly. And then like kids doing funny things and animals doing funny things. But then there's ads, and the ads are always like in the TikTok style. So occasionally she'll want to stop. Like, can we watch this? I'm like, it's just a shitty mobile game. Like, like, no, we're going fast. But this one that really caught her attention was called Clawy. And I think there are like various versions of these, but we downloaded it and I was actually sort of compelled by it as well. It is an app that lets you remotely interact with like a warehouse of claw machines.
Oh no.
And you can then win, you know, so it's got a, you know, it's got an interface. It's got two different, and then this one anyway, it's got like two different cameras, like one that looks forward at the machine and one on the side. And you can switch between those. It's very slow. You kind of want to like do your research and then just commit. And there's like a big blue button in the center that like moves the claw. So you can move it, you know, from to the right and then to up, like a kind of a traditional claw machine. And we've like gone down like a, like, it would be so much cheaper for me to just look, Jessica, do you want to just go on Amazon and like, just like what plushie do you want? But of course, like all good claw machines, they're exploitative trash that is so much fun. Like, it is like low risk gambling for a child. Like I acknowledge that, but it's super fun. And like the tension of, I've never gotten mad at my child when I've played a video game with them because I try to be like very understanding that she likes to have her own failures and I just try and help her. I have had to restrain myself a couple of times watching her do this fucking claw app. And it was like, we talk in advance, like, what's the strategy? Because she doesn't want me to touch it. She doesn't want me to hold the button, even though she doesn't have a good sense because she's five of like how long you should hold it right and how long you should hold it up. We've got the right down. Left to right, we get a good sense of. The depth part, understandably, that's does not tough. Have a good sense of.
I mean, it is tough. This is how I ended up spending 3 hours trying to complete a claw machine quest in Judgment.
Oh, really?
There's a quest that only advances if you fish out one particular toy from a claw machine. And on the screen can produce the little bit of parallax thing moving side to side. So that like all scans. The minute it's like, and then you need to like fish it out from the back there. I'm like, I have no idea where the back is. On the screen. I'm like timing it now, just like hoping.
Right. And so that is like, we have done things like that where like there's a daily, right, where you can get some like free coins that aren't enough to like really do anything, but like they refresh every 24 hours. And I've done like one, two, I was like, what is the pace of this thing? So that then I can do that with my daughter. I'm like, okay, I think this is 3 seconds back. And so it's like, hold it, and you get to hold it. Because it's important that you hold it. And I do want her to like fail so she can understand that like I'm not just going to go on Amazon and buy you this little plushie. Like it's part of the game. And it's like, but it's like one, two. And she's messed it up or her finger slips. I'm just like, she calls me out and swears now. I'm just like, oh, fuck. She's like, what'd you say? So did you just swear? And I was like, yeah, I did. Daddy messed up. He got the count wrong. That's on Dad. That is definitely on Dad. You didn't do anything wrong, Jessica. And it's so goofy because she's won two of them, but then it's just a money pit. It is just a money pit because they won't ship anything until you pay extra on top. So it's like, hey, so what they're trying to kind of encourage you to do is like win a bunch of them and then pay like the $8. But she won one, was very excited. And so I paid like the $8 that also gives you some coins to do some more pulls. But it's like, we'll have you tracking order and a tracking number in 2 weeks. But like the fine print is like, it's probably going to be like 8 weeks, which means like you're not going to get this for 2.5 months. And then I like looked up on a Reddit about this game and it's like, hey, like these are all like very questionable. Like they say they have like Mickey Mouse and Pokemon. Well, what they have is they go to Alibaba, like the Amazon equivalent, and like just mass purchase.
Here's a yellow blob.
Apparently the quality is awful. Like but
your kids love Pikachu or Big Bird.
And I mean,
that
is it.
That all of that, but like, and that is all true. And like the tech for it is like really like kind of wonky, but like it's really fucking fun. Like it is a money pit, but like I have ordered her no Robux to buy like a little pink dress or whatever in those games. I've just kept my stand there. But have I probably put like $30 to $40 into Clawy? Like at this point, like Christ. I think I have. We've only gotten two things out of it. But that I feel like that's normal for a claw machine. Have you seen how much they charge you to do a claw machine at an arcade?
Yeah.
Like these days at a Dave and Buster's or an equivalent? It's like, yeah, do you want to pay $250 for a shot at jack shit? Like that's what claw machines are right now. But it's fun. I don't recommend it because it is like feels a little addictive. And like it's just like, ooh, guess I will try and get another one of these little stuffies.
That shit is like a decent, again, like once I finished that quest in Judgment, I didn't stop going through the claw machines. I was like, I'm getting good at this now. We're cooking. Especially, does this game get the experience of when you knock the thing to the side with the claw machine, and so now you've changed its coordinates, and yes. You have to like fish it?
Okay, so the game is sorts the price of the prizes into different levels, right? And like that also corresponds with how expensive it is. You're using coins, right? So you're like, the more, it's just like anything else. The more you pay up front, the more coins you get, so the more chances you get. And the daily is just about getting like a ball that you'd see in a ball pit, and the different colors correspond to like a number of coins you can get. At bare minimum, you're spending 150 to 200 coins, and sometimes those coins that come out of the ball pit, you can get up to 140. So like rarely you can get one that'll like let you actually interact with something that could manifest into a cheap 50-cent thing. But so when you do one, one of the cool things is actually, just as a side note, sometimes it's a popular one, like maybe it's on sale that week or a little cheaper to play, and you sit in a queue and you can watch other people do it. So you can see them like changing the board before you actually get into it, or learn like, hey, it's just not worth going into this corner that looks promising. It's just a nightmare. Like that whatever rig they're using is just not going to pick any of it up. And you can also see videos of like previous wins. So you can sort of like see how the claw responds to when it's trying to pick that item up before. But to your point, Rob, yes, you can interact with it and then like, you know, sort of like bump something aside. And then insidiously, it's like, hey, seems like you really wanted this item. It didn't work out. We'll knock off a couple of coins and you can give it another shot. And I don't let my kid do that. It is a one and done. You get one shot. We do it once a day. And that's it.
You got to teach them about consequences. Like back in the story.
she was upset the first time. And then I stuck to it. And like now she's cool, like when she fails, which unfortunately is most of the time. But we've won three things, and now we'll slowly wait to get them around Christmas time, and I'll just wrap them instead of saying they came.
Wait, are you doing
from Alibaba?
You're doing one individual claw go, or multiple goes, but a certain amount.
You can do as many as you want, and it just knocks.
But
gives you a discount.
Are you only allowing your child to move the claw?
Yeah, that's
once
what I meant.
Well, she gets one attempt. Yes, that's it.
Wow.
Per day,
yes.
Damn. You must have a will of iron.
Also, those machines are supposedly, I mean, this was information that may not be true.
Kato, these are built to fuck you. Like, you
right,
can
right,
tell.
Right. The point is that if this is the type that picks up, then the trick with those is that it won't exert a certain amount of PSI until it's been given enough money in the day. So
the trick
is you watch a bunch of people fail a bunch of times and then you go in and at the end for those. There's a different type of claw machine that is a little more skill based.
Just to your point, Kato, before you get to your second thing, is that would be noteworthy if that's how these work. Please write in if they do. This would be useful.
Yeah.
Because as I mentioned, you can watch in the corner of each one says, this is the last time this machine delivered a prize. And so it'll say 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago, 43 minutes ago. And so if people know if this is how these machines work, I would then be trying to game it a little bit to give my kid, an extra.
Right. Especially because you're only doing one. I think that it's definitely from things I've heard of this. It's like it's absolutely based on it's time to pay out. The PSI gets grippier. It'll actually be able to pick it up, where before it just won't. It will not grab hard enough. Now there's a different type that is a little more fair if harder to do because it presents itself as a claw game, but what it really is a pushing game, where a object, a prize, is kind of balanced in between two rods in the center, and there's a claw. But what you really want to do with the claw is just jab at the edges of the thing that you're trying
to
knock off.
Can you show me
off.
A picture of this?
Yeah, I'll
I
find...
know if I've seen one of these
do
before.
Do you think Vice would let us take Kato to Vegas?
if by Vegas Christ. You mean the local
Atlantic
Dave and Buster's.
City?
No, look, here's the
and
thing.
We've,
here's
and
the
we're
thing
going
about
to
this.
A claw machine.
These things have
honestly,
existed.
Honestly, though, if we could set up a camera at a claw machine and get us $200, people would watch us do that claw machine for 2 hours.
Part of the reason I know about this is that I watched a YouTube video where a streamer just does one of these claw games for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Here, let me find.
There's a couple different ones. Claw is just the one that like popped up in TikTok.
And there's
I
ones
now
that
need
are
to look
like
into
apps or versus just this is like the one that this one was. Here, let me get this. Here's this video at this exact time copy so you can look. This one is just a website. Like you don't even have to download it. You just go to a browser mm-hmm. and fucking hit the button. So go to that.
Yes, Tariba. This is the other one that I've seen people
Tariba,
talk about.
So this one is.
Oh, is that a sandwich?
It's a sandwich dog. It's a Shiba that's a sandwich. It's actually amazing. I love what they're trying
what
to do here.
What am I looking at?
Click.
Yeah, go to like 140, maybe like hit back a few seconds so you can see it a couple times. But you see this like very large claw that seems to be wide enough to actually grab these two like plushies, which are, I would say probably...
Oh, that's not food?
6 inches in diameter.
No,
these are like 6 inch diameter round cubes. Let's see. The actual prize, if you want to look and see what he's trying to win here when it's not in this vacuum package... I think they pick it earlier on in like around 106.
Oh, you can see it if towards here
towards the bottom. You can see, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take a screenshot, and share it.
Yeah, thanks.
I do just want to note the streamer currently being discussed is Wayne Radio TV, a guy who I think does really really cool, interesting, and funny stuff. This is the person behind Half-Life VR AI.
Half-Life VR AI is a very funny series. Yes,
it is. When streamers really get close to performance art, like improv performance art, that is my favorite version of live streaming, is when people just end up stumbling into a weird art project. And Half-Life VR AI is one of my favorite someone just stumbled into a weird art project streams.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah. And the thing that Patrick is, you can see what the thing is. It's like this little Shiba that is a sandwich. Mm-hmm. You can see the picture on the wall in the background there. But it's like vacuum wrapped into like a little sphere. So essentially, you have this crane, which looks like it's the right diameter to pick it up, but that's not what you do with it at all. What you need to do with it is poke, like have it extend, it opens up, and it lowers. And as it lowers, you want to jab at the item to knock it out from between these two things, and that's how you win them.
Is that the intent or that's the hack? That's like
that's
what
the
you
intent.
Should do.
That's the intent. Oh, okay. That's the only way to win these. They never do the thing where they actually grab hard enough. It only is ever used to push. Part of the thing, it's like it's in a closed position when it's above the thing, but then when you hit the button, it opens up as if it's going to grab it. So you have to also account for how far out the pincer is going to be, and you have to be positioned correctly to the left or right of the item for it to push down. It's a little more complicated to actually hit your mark, but in theory, you can do it if you're good at these. I've seen people who get good at this.
Yeah,
you can do it in a lot fewer attempts than the type where it's like eventually the payout will give you the right PSI.
Wow.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Interesting. Whoa. It's getting late here. I have important plans.
Oh my god.
Like maybe going to get ice cream.
You didn't get ice cream during the break?
Oh my god.
You know, resurrecting
we left for an
bits.
Hour. I thought you went to go get ice
another
cream.
Another dead after the pitch on that bit. Got to bring it back towards the end.
Patrick, did I see also you're back into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, just briefly. I started playing
Turtle Power.
Yeah, it's a good theme song. Thanks, Kato.
That was Ren. What?
See, if only either of you had a camera.
Motherfucker. Listen, it's not my fault. My laptop sucks.
I'm happy to expense another camera. Just, yeah, tell me what my budget is. I'll expense one. I'll get another one of these Logitechs. Let's set it up here. That'll be fun. I have like two or three of everything now on this desk. It's wild. Dude,
I'm gonna perform judo on your body. I swear. When I get back
been
to New York.
5 years doesn't know how to. Anyway, Shredder's Revenge. It's a new from Tribute Games. They've done a lot of, it's like a studio that has done a lot of stuff that I always get drawn in by the art, and then the game itself I find like less interesting. Was it Hookshot was the one from a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Mercenary Kings? Wasn't that also them?
I'm not remembering. Hookshot was that roguelike, right?
Yeah, it was roguelite with a hookshot, which is like, I just love hookshots in games, and it plays so well, and I just hated the roguelike structure. It was just dying to have structured levels. It just didn't work for me. Paladin, Mercenary Kings. Yeah, there's just been a lot of games that I look at it and go, I think I really want to play that. And then I play it and go, I think I'm good. And Shredder's Revenge is essentially like a new take on like the really popular beat-em-ups from the 90s, like Turtles in Time and things like that. Turtles in Time, a game that, you know, was a port of an arcade game that was a full price game, because of course it would be. The cart was brought home. Purchased as a big surprise from my mom.
Did you also have this experience?
We beat it. I might have told the story on a podcast before, but like we beat it in an hour because that's as long as the game is. And my mom subsequently screamed at whoever she could on the Nintendo or Konami customer support lines to be like, you sold a game for $75 or whatever it was. And
$1985. No, I don't know when it was.
1995, closer probably. But like, and my kids beat it in an hour. Like, this is a ripoff. And I don't think she.
But you could fling foot soldiers at the camera.
You could mode 7, baby.
Yeah.
And
just incredible shit.
And Shredder's Revenge does have that, and it's like up to 7 players. But I'm not really in a position to. I'm going to be playing this game with other people. Like, I don't know. It has like a, you know, you can, I think you can pair up with strangers, but like, I'm not going to do that. So I was just kind of curious last night. Like, well, I got this code. I'm going to check it out. Like, see how this plays as a single player game. If there's anything to it besides looking at the, like the really cute and very good pixel graphics. And like, surprisingly there is, still definitely a game that is probably best played with other people. But I was both surprised at the depth to the, like combat mechanics. Like, it's not like they've gone full in, like there's parries and things like that, but there's a lot. Like, there's like a full level, like 3 levels of supers that have you're building up those super meters by chaining hits together.
Oh, shit.
There's a whole dodging mechanic, like multiple like jumping and combos. Like, it was just, there's more depth to it than you normally would get out of like a beat 'em up, which like especially the coin muncher ones from the 90s are like, I don't know, you're going to get hit a lot and just go find your parents so you can get another dollar to put in. Like, they were just meant to be cheap and not really beatable. And this one, you know, it has things like iframes with the enemies where like this still has the sense of cheap shots that I think are in some ways probably intrinsic to games of this type. But I found it like surprisingly fun and enjoyable as a single player thing, both because of the combat and also because of this, like what they call the challenge system, which is like, here are micro goals to accomplish while you're just moving from left to right and adoring the pretty art and throwing the Foot Clan at the screen. The ones too many levels, even in the first couple hours, are like, beat it without getting hit. And she's like, no. Like, that's just not gonna happen. And I Googled it to be like, am I missing something? Is there like a block or a, you know, how would you even do this? And like, just like so many threads are like, the challenges are really cool. I really wish there weren't so many ones where it's don't get hit because they're not very fun. But it's things like that. One of them, Rob, is like throw, you know, 15 enemies at the screen. And like, that's fun. Like a fun, like little thing to incorporate into what you're doing that makes a game that is sort of built upon repetition have a little bit of like depth while you're maybe like going through the level trying to find like a collectible you might have missed. So, you know, it's not a game that I don't know that I'd like wholly recommend if you're going to play it by yourself, but it is not a game that is like meaningless without other people. Like I'll be fine if all I get out of this is a couple of hours, like really enjoying the art and like the whole like vibe of it, and like going through this really cool 2D world pixel map that they've built, and then finishing out these challenges, as long as they don't require me to get mad at the fact that like a Foot Clan member I saw off screen hit me and suddenly challenge failed. but otherwise, like Shredder's Revenge is really good and really pretty. Yeah, I think people should check it out.
Awesome. Did you get it on? Is that on Switch or?
I'm all Steam Deck now, baby. Steam Deck. I have it on Switch. It's a portable. It's a more powerful portable Switch for me, baby. Oh, and the other note is Ren. Neon White is less fun to play when I see you fall off the leaderboard, and so
I will catch back up. I will happily.
I hit whatever marker you did, and I was like, she's not there anymore. I was like, okay, well.
Who's left?
All right.
I will come back. Patrick, honestly, if you just tell me I will come back. I will beat all of your scores, and then I will like go to the next mission. We're just
thank
playing.
Thank you. I just finished mission 5. Okay, so that's what I'm up to now. It feels like 2/3-ish through the game or so.
You'll leave him a couple chalk marks on the door frame for him.
I know who my target is. I figured out who my target is.
I'm just, and you know what? For all the dunking I've done, I went back this morning thinking, can I do a bit on this show where I was like, hey, Kato, it doesn't even matter. Like, I don't see your times, Kato, but like, it doesn't, if you caught up, like, it's not gonna matter. Like, actually, like, Kato's times are really good. It's like, I need Ren to keep pace with me and Kato to stay behind, because then I'll just be annoyed that Kato's spending so much more time to lop off the times on his runs.
Kato, I have an important question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where are your times relative to a particular Sean that we know?
Oh, I beat Sean.
Here's the thing. Sean is Joel's benchmark.
I feel like, well, here's the thing. I'm still in the first mission. I gotta go check, because Joel and Sean were like, Joel spent more time in those first missions. I haven't seen what it gets to in the late game. This is gonna be fun for me, because I'll have both Ren and Patrick's times ahead of me. I mean, as
Kato,
I go
sounds
through.
Like you'll have everybody ahead of you. You'll be like the entire
I just mean as people that I will talk to again Earth, recently.
You'll be like, where do I stack up?
I mean, Kato, I have started topping my friend. Last time I went in, I was topping my friends list.
Nice.
Last time I played, so I should go back.
Sean is very good.
Did you know that there's a fifth medal?
A fifth medal?
What?
Yes. So there's bronze, silver, gold, ace, mm-hmm. and then a fifth dev medal. Which is if you beat the dev time.
I thought Patrick
got
really into alchemy for a second.
It's that you beat the dev time?
Yeah, it's not listed.
Shit.
You can find it if you're good enough.
Fuck.
Well, I'm sure it's actually listed somewhere.
I have to have gotten close, because there are some missions where I am within spitting distance of. I become within spitting distance of, like, the good times, capital mm-hmm, G. I consider myself within spitting distance of the good times when I look at the board and I go, those are execution milliseconds. Once I realize that they're execution milliseconds, I mostly move on. But every once in a while, I'll stick around. There was one the other day that was just, it was delicious. It was in Mission 3, Patrick. Mm-hmm. The one where you're with the waterfall. It starts with a waterfall with a bunch of stomps. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
That was so fucking fun. Oh, that one feels so good to play. What an excellent video game. Note to self, download and play Neon White on my laptop after this podcast ends.
Checking times.
I'm loading up Neon White. Yeah. I want to see because I found the times, and I can compare this relative to,
oh my god,
our own, and then we will get Oh, it's so loud. And then we'll get Rob on his way to so he can go enjoy his
ice cream.
Oh, be quiet. Again.
Also, Patrick, can you let me know if my my level 3 times are relative to yours?
Sorry, did you ask me a question? Sorry, I had the game was blaring in my ears, and I had to turn down the volume.
I just want it on the record where our times are relative to each other. Now that we have set up the way that we're doing this, I'm so curious now.
Let's see. Can I not? Okay, so the first level movement, Kato.
Yeah.
Your time 18 seconds. 18.784. Ren's 20.235. For some reason, it's not scrolling over, so I can't see mine. But it's under that. and so Kato, as a reminder, because this is the most closest point of comparison.
Yeah.
Kato's is 18.784. Oh, I think you did get it, Kato.
Did I get it?
Because this is 18.93.
What? When does it tell you that? What? Did I get a thing? I don't remember getting a thing. Maybe
you should go back and look.
Yeah, I should go back. So, where does it list them? Does it list them in a specific place?
These can't be right, because I didn't... Okay, this says I beat this one.
Right.
And
do they only unlock after you finish the game or something? Is like, we'll show it to you after? Because I haven't, you know, obviously, haven't finished.
I have an important question.
Yeah.
Do we know that it's static?
Yes.
Okay.
Are we okay? We know that it's static and isn't a situation where the devs can theoretically, if they improve their times, change where the dev metal is.
Yeah, that would be very funny. Yeah, because like this one for the second level, Pummel 8.32. I guess okay. So yeah, 8.32. I got 9.27. Ren's got 9.22. Kato's got 8.29. So yeah, you technically beat that one.
I don't remember it showing me anything. Mm. And I wonder whether or not they just don't show up till later.
Maybe it's just an achievement. But it says red medals are given for dev. You can look at, if you want to look it up later, yeah, apparently yeah. Tora Horse is the name on the leaderboard. Those are the dev times.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of cool that they are on their own
right
leaderboard. Anyway.
So to this point, remember we had questions about how these leaderboards and challenge times are set. Let's see. Jake Rabinowitz wrote in sort of explaining how they've solved this or how they approach this with their game. So Jake writes in, "Hi Waypointers, in episode 491 of the podcast, you discussed how game devs pick the metal times for their games. I wanted to chime in with how I landed on them for my game PogoChamp. I tried to answer a lot of the things you brought up during your conversation, so I broke this into sections. Sorry it's so long. It's not that long. But I hope it helps answer some of the questions you had. Quick things about the game to frame the info that follows. It's a 3D platform. It's designed with speedrunners and non-gamers in mind. Short levels, all less than a minute. 4 challenge times on each level, and then leaderboards for each level, global and friends only, and then leaderboard scores have replays. So, determining challenge times. I playtest levels for fun and difficulty as I'm building them, and after I'm satisfied with the level, I'll determine the start times. Over the course of development, I came up with a rubric for how to determine each start time as follows. Completing the level at all gets you 1 star. 2 stars, I hold the controller upside down and play the level. Really? No flipping, no advanced techniques. I assume flipping is one of the mechanics that's being used there. 3 stars, some flipping, no advanced techniques. I'll typically do 1 extra jump that isn't necessary. But then there are secret rainbow gem times, rainbow jumps for most all times, perfectly timed jumps that give extra speed, no unnecessary extra jumps. Rainbow gem times are not world record times and should not require world record skills. I will play level 20 to 50 times for each of these categories. I'll take note of my completion times until I have what I consider a good archetypal run for each category and set the time based on that, usually my score plus some fudge factor. The purpose of challenge times, something you didn't talk about in your discussion but might be of interest, is the question, what purpose do these times serve? The original purpose of the different challenge times in PogoChamp was to hint to people about what was possible. My original 3-star times were much harder than they are now, with the idea that people would see them as aspirational. instead of aspirational, players found these times demoralizing because they seemed impossible to beat and nobody wants just two stars. Adding leaderboards to each level meant that people could already see the extent of what was possible, so it was free to adjust those challenge times to serve a more useful purpose. The leaderboards also have replays attached to every record, so it's an extremely useful teaching learning tool for people learning to improve their times or just gawk at world records. Now, the star times serve as a way to make sure that people don't get to levels they aren't prepared for. In PogoChamp, you need a certain number of stars to unlock the next set of levels. As counterintuitive as it might seem, blocking people's progression with these barriers is actually a super important part of what keeps the game from becoming frustrating. Requiring a certain amount of expertise before exposing players to harder challenges ensures they don't get in over their heads. Forcing players to go back and replay earlier levels to get more stars also serves as a way for players to clearly see how much their skills have improved over the course of the game. Unintended tech. The main criteria I use for deciding whether to patch out an unintended strategy or technique is, A, is it cool? And B, how easy is it? Examples of techniques I've patched out for being not cool or too easy. On one level, the optimal strategy was to wait for a sheep to randomly walk into or near the pen before you start moving. I changed it so the sheep's wandering doesn't start until you've moved. This is very good marketing, Jason. I'm getting more curious about this game as you talk about it. On conservation of momentum, a level where the goal is on a shelf that juts out from the wall, the goal zone extended through the bottom of the shelf, meaning the fastest strategy was to jump straight up through the bottom of the shelf. This was clearly a bug, so I fixed it and removed the offending leaderboard entries. Techniques I haven't patched out, positioning your character on moving objects can cause them to surf on the object. Landing in the corner of a wall and a conveyor belt can cause your next jump to go farther than it normally would. Jumping from wall to wall is technically faster than jumping off the ground, in part because walls have less friction. Other things I haven't patched, crashing while charging a jump can cause your character's ragdoll to fly 2 to 5 times as far as it should. I found the root cause of this bug, but haven't fixed it because I think it's funny. A benefit of having replays for all leaderboard entries is that it's easy to see new techniques as they appear, and if I decide to patch out an exploit, I can go through and remove the entries that used it. As far as hidden and unexplained tech, sometimes the reason certain advanced techniques in games aren't explained is that explaining them is hard, and they're not necessary for most players. PogoChamp has a rainbow jump, which gives your jobs increased height and speed. Rainbow jumps are required for top leaderboard scores and the secret rainbow jump times, but not for any of the normal gameplay. Thoroughly explaining how to rainbow jump in text, designing a level that requires them, was way too cumbersome for a game with so little explicit tutorialization, so they remain a quote-unquote secret advanced technique. Most people find them accidentally and eventually figure out how to do them, but some people never do, and that's fine, because the game can be completed without them. Saving players from themselves. Something that happens occasionally during streams and playtests is similar to what happened to Kato. People will play the first level, get a 1-star time, and then grind that level for better star times without first building up a fundamental understanding of the game's mechanics or playing through the rest of the quote-unquote tutorial levels. No offense. As a game developer, this can be kind of annoying. But I've done a few things that helped make this problem less prevalent. Hardest challenges are hidden by default. Rainbow gem times are only visible if you've obtained every normal star in the game. This prevents people from chasing a goal they're not ready for. Older versions of the game didn't hide these challenge times, so people wouldn't even get past level 1. All leaderboard entries have replays. I'd already built in the system, so attaching the replays to the leaderboard was straightforward, thanks Steam. Leaderboard replays provide a much more comprehensive teaching tool than I ever could create for the game manually. Want to see how your friend got such a fast time? Just watch him do it. You can even race against a ghost of their time to compare side by side. These tactics don't work 100% of the time, but it has been a long time since I've seen anyone play level 1 over and over for an hour. Regarding the call the little freak in to figure out what their time is approach that Ren cited, there's a little bit of truth to this. One of my longtime friends has been obsessed with the game and is number 1 on the leaderboard on every level. I will say, though, his advice on star times and level design is, for the most part, very bad. Hope that gives you some more insight into the logic behind some of the decisions devs are making. Happy to clarify this or any other questions you have. Thanks for being a voice of sanity in these crazy times. Keep up all the great work. Jake Rabinowitz.
Nice.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Toro Horse. ToroHorse.com. That's Ben Esposito. That's just his website. That is his username everywhere, so.
Extremely good.
Yeah.
And I'll say to Neon White's great credit, like the times that they landed on, and hopefully I'll have more insight into that when, unfortunately, I'm going to get answers to that while I'm on vacation next week. But, like, they don't feel too daunting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you know, to this, you know, person who was writing in is like, even the, like, ace metal, the one that is like, hey, you're really going to have to kind of nail everything and know one of the secrets to get there. It all feels within reach. Maybe that changes based on, you know, your own personal skill ceiling. But, like, I have found that I've done the ace metal on every single level, including a really cool boss fight that I wasn't expecting about halfway through the game. And they're just all really satisfying. Like, it never feels like I couldn't do this. It's like, no, I just need to spend, like, 10, 15 minutes and I can do it. And it's really fucking satisfying. And I'm sure, like, finding that balance between all that stuff and a game that, especially on your first run through a level, like early on, is like, okay, like, how am I going to shave 25 seconds off this? And then you do, is really good and seems really hard to find that balance. So credit to Neon White. And that's really cool that person wrote in to let us know.
Yeah, I think the two intended route strategy or two explicit route strategy of Neon White is a really brilliant way to do this. Noticing the second route on your first attempt, or like the quote unquote second route on your first attempt, is one of my favorite feelings in that game, where it's like, oh, I got the ace medal on my first attempt because I just did the level in a way that does not traditionally make sense, but it worked. And I think that is a really good call on their part.
All right. Well, I'm in a hurry to get to Dairy Queen. That's a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. If you aren't,
what if you didn't get an ice cream from a claw machine, Bob?
I think
that'd be a mess.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty nasty. I'm not saying I wouldn't.
Cone crunching.
Pretty nasty.
Actually, wait.
Consider one of those.
That'd
little
be useful. Dippin' Dot boxes, not boxes, you know. Man.
Love the Dippin' Dots.
See, I'm imagining a claw machine.
You know, yeah, the little dot ice cream.
The little, yeah.
Yeah. What if the claw machine was just scoopers? And, like, there's just a pit of ice cream, and you're just moving it across the pit. And
it lowers down. So it lowers down, and it tries to scoop, but unless you put in enough money, it doesn't push hard enough to actually dig into the ice cream.
Use that feet quarters in until, like, the climate control fails just a little bit, and the ice cream softens sufficiently.
Yeah.
For the...
Advanced unintended ice cream claw machine strats are letting the claw machine break one ice cream cone so it gets sticky from the sugar, and it makes it actually so you don't need as high of a PSI on the second ice cream cone you pick up because it's so sticky. Unintended strats. That's how you actually good, set the rainbow jump time on the ice cream claw machine.
Anyway, if you want more from Waypoint, can't get it here. We're done. For this week, it's over. But if you insist, you can go on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook and YouTube, Waypoint Vice. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Patrick, where can people find you?
They cannot find me on the internet for the next week because I will be on vacation with
out
my family. But otherwise, you can find me at Patrick Klopik.
Ren.
You can find me on Twitter at Ren or Raven.
Kata.
At @A_Kato_appears.
You can also check out what we published on waypoint.vice.com. This week we had Ren writing up her reactions and experiences with Last Call BBS. So that is well worth reading. It's a delightful piece. We've also been streaming a whole bunch thanks to Waypoint Plus. Ren and I achieved a marginal victory over the start of chaos infestation in Warhammer Demon Hunters.
It was a rousing victory. Thank you very much. All of the characters in the game said we did a great job, except for that one guy.
There were a few characters who said we didn't do a great job or like, we do the right thing? Either way, we made one problem turn into like six problems and then we called it. So I think that's a good place to leave it. Speaking of problems sort of metastasizing, Patrick, Kato and I have been playing a lot of Motorsport Manager. I thought we'd get fired. We didn't. So that's been going better.
Yeah, actually, we got a lot of leeway there, I think.
We had our first good results. So we're clawing our way forward. We are the claw machine now, trying to pluck those delicious points finishes.
Yeah.
Out of our racing series. So all that is made possible by our Waypoint Plus subscribers. If you want more Waypoint, you can go to waypointplus.com and subscribe. That gives you access to our premium feed, and it also supports Waypoint and everything else we do here. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. For now, we are calling time on this week. We will talk to you again next week. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
I was trying to make a funny goof where you just say, like, yeah, we took an hour break, even though we didn't.
what a fun
taking
joke.
Taking advantage of the form, really.
Right.
You know, it's a podcast. Like, they don't know. It's they not real know. Time.
It's going to be cut out.
It's all an illusion.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.